So Pamina seems to also be getting into trouble with Monostatos. He's always kind of lusting after her. And as we continue on with the story, Papageno saves her one more time. And Sarastro tells Pamina that she cannot return to her mother. And he then brings Tamino in, and the young lovers are finally together. And now we're at the point also where Tamino and Papageno are being prepped for the trials. Now, without a doubt, some of the best known and most exciting vocal music in the opera belongs to the Queen of the Night. And it takes a real special type of soprano voice to sing this music. If people are familiar with some of these arias, they go very, very high in the soprano range. The singer not only needs to be able to sing that high, but also to bring a certain amount of venom and menace to her voice, because she's kind of a nasty piece of work. But we have a lovely singer in our production. She does this role so well. Aline Coutin, Canadian soprano, who is singing this for the first time in a complete role with the COC, but she did appear in our concerts, which inaugurated the new Opera House in 2006. Miss Coutin has sung this role all over the world, including Paris and the Glyndebourne Festival in England. And I'm really excited to finally hear her.
Oh, and finally hear her at the Opera
At
House,
the
too,
Opera
in full
House,
role.
yeah.
Wonderful.
So in the Queen of the Night's aria Der Hülle Rach, she hands a dagger to her daughter Pamina, saying that she has to go and kill Sarastro, and then she makes a very dramatic exit.
So I don't know if people, when you hear the aria, it sounds enchanting. It's really eerie and nasty, because what she's saying, Pamina said, "I don't think I can kill him." And she's saying, "If you don't kill him, you won't be my daughter anymore." And it's so nasty. The words are quite vile. But here she is in full virtuosic splendor. And we're going to hear Sumi Jo.
Yes.
Thank you.
something I really enjoy about Mozart's opera in general, of course there are the wonderful arias like the one we just heard, but you also have these amazing ensembles where you'll have, you know, five or six people singing at the same time, all giving their thoughts on what's happening on the stage. And it's just it's so exciting, that kind of music. And in this opera, a lot of the really great ensembles go to the Three Little Boys. And they're usually sung, I think originally they would have been sung by boy sopranos, but these days we often have little girls singing them in our production.
Or boys and girls.
Yeah, or a mixture of the two. And in our production we'll have some of the singers from the Canadian Children's Opera Company taking these roles. And they're quite demanding roles for young singers. But it's just the harmonies of these young, very pristine voices together that I think really creates that magical feeling in this opera. It's for me anyway. And, you know, sometimes you see them floating in from high up, the proscenium. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to give away what they're going to be on in our production. We've seen it. But we don't want to give everything away. But it's very enchanting.
It's great fun.
So we'll hear the three boys now as they enter to once again save the day. And in this case, they come to Tamino and Papageno and bring them sustenance, as well as returning the magic flute and chimes to them.
The Magic Flute was a great success for Mozart right from the start. It was sold out night after night after its premiere. And I suppose the tragedy is that after that last amazing year of his life, mm-hmm. you know, he produced so much. And it ended with the Magic Flute, and he was already very ill, and he was to die shortly thereafter. Magic Flute just went on to become, and remains still, one of the best-loved operas ever. I think the appeal has to do with the fact it has something for everyone. There's a wide variety of themes, character types, and as we said before, you can enjoy it on so many different levels. There are also more solemn, very human messages, and Sarastro has a lot to do with that. He is very much the center of wisdom in the opera. Mm-hmm. Wisdom, goodness, kindness, love, forgiveness. He's just a very, very noble character, and he has the most inspiring and beautiful music to mm-hmm. sing. You also then Papageno, and you have how, you know, he can be extremely silly and funny. He's like the sort of the id, I suppose, in all of us. He's just, you know, he wants what he wants. He wants a girlfriend. He wants a good meal.
Yeah.
He's very simple. He wants the basic sort of pleasures of life. And he's so funny and charming. And I think the children especially relate to him because mm-hmm. he's the one who expresses the most. I'm frightened of this.
You know, right.
I'm aching for that. I'm longing for this.
Yeah.
He's in touch with the animals. You know, mm-hmm. he loves the birds. There's something sort of childlike and wonderful about him. And then there's the journey of falling in love for the hero and heroine. Tamino and Pamina have the coming together, the trials they go through together, and then the acceptance into the temple. And it's a real rite of passage, a real growing up. I can't think of another opera that combines all these possibilities so beautifully. No.
No, I can't. I know, I'm thinking about it.
Gazing off.
No, I just... I mean, so many operas, I mean, a Verdi opera or Puccini, I mean, there's a plot, you know, it sort of follows a linear progression that makes sense. And I mean, not to say this doesn't make sense, but you're right, there's just so many different elements.
It's more like a wonderful dream.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting because, of course, the other thing is the various Masonic influences mm-hmm. that came
yeah,
to
we
pass.
Haven't really gotten to that, but...
That's right. I mean, at the time, the Masons had to be a very secret society, mm-hmm. and Mozart and Schikaneder were both members of a lodge, mm-hmm. and they brought in Masonic elements to the opera. And, you know, that's something I'm not a Mason, but I'm sure there are Masons in our audience, and they might. Yeah.
At the time, there was... some fear, I think, that they were revealing certain secrets that they shouldn't have been mm-hmm. in the opera. So
I wonder which ones, because there you have the Egyptian elements, you have the number three.
Yeah.
And, of course, you have, I suppose, certain, you know, aspirations.
Right. Yeah.
And brotherhood, because it is very much mm-hmm. a brotherhood, isn't mm-hmm. it, the Masonic mm-hmm. tradition.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there are whole tomes written on the Masonic elements within this opera, and you can get really detailed, yes. you know, with that.
Speaking of Papageno, he has a whole subplot we haven't really touched on yet. And as we said, all he wants is a good meal and a girlfriend. Several times throughout the opera, as he goes through his trials, he encounters an old crone, a really sort of old, bent-over woman, who says to him that she's his sweetheart. He just laughs. He says, okay, I don't think so.
No, not for me.
and then at one moment, she actually doffs her cape or her right. cloak. And she's this beautiful young woman who seems to be a sort of perfect match for him physically.
Yeah.
She's dressed the same way. And not only that, her name is Papagena. And Papageno is just enchanted the minute he sees her. And she's immediately whisked away mm-hmm. by the priests of the temple because he's not ready yet. He
right.
has not deserved her.
Yeah.
But now he has this wonderful carrot on a stick. He knows he's going to get his girlfriend at some point. And when they do finally come together at the end of the opera, they have one of the most charming duets where the two of them excitedly plan their union and the very many children that they will produce. First a little Papageno, then a little Papagena, and they kind of battle with that a little bit as to how many Papagenos or Papagenas they will have. But ultimately, making their family together is going to be great joy for them. So we'll hear Michael Krause and Lottie Leitner in that duet now. It was 1790 when Schikaneder first probably suggested the material mm-hmm. to Mozart based on a story, Lulu or the Magic Flute. And
not Berg's Lulu, something like that.
But Mozart went with it finally, mm-hmm. and they created this beautiful piece of music, and Mozart finally decided to go for it, and it premiered in 1791. masonry may have been forbidden at this time in Austria, but what's even more interesting is that women were not permitted to be part of the Masonic Brotherhood, being a brotherhood, I suppose. And what's interesting is that Pamina is very much a central figure. As Tamina goes through the trials, at the end, Pamina's with him, and they're both initiated at the end.
Yes,
and we can only assume this is, you know, Mozart's and or Schikaneder's desire.
To and include Mozart, a woman.
Yes, absolutely. At the same time, there's certainly calls that the magic flute, intrinsically is misogynistic. You know, the Queen of the Night is the symbol of the night, of darkness.
She's definitely the villain of the piece.
The moon, Sarastra is the sun, the light, enlightenment.
Right.
So.
And I think, you know, the at least initially anyway, the priests around Sarastra are all men. It's the male chorus.
Yes,
and
yes.
So that real feeling of almost like men are on the good side.
Oh, yes.
The women are bad. I mean, it's the Queen and her three ladies.
Yeah.
And that's certainly something, you know, a charge that's often brought against this opera that some modern listeners, I guess, may be slightly uncomfortable with sometime. But like we've been saying, I mean, it seems like Mozart really wanted to include Pamina. And I know definitely our director, Diane Paulus, is one of her focuses in this production is to show that Pamina is definitely...
Well, she's almost the focus of the production. It's her birthday or her name day that we're celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be very interesting to see how this works out on the stage this winter, the COC. And again, it's one of those other levels in the magic flute that you can delve into and discuss animatedly.
When we last saw Pamina, she was given the awful task of killing Zarastro, and her situation hasn't been made much better by the fact that she feels that Tamino no longer loves her since he won't speak with her. One of his trials is to remain silent, and and they meet at one point, and you know, she expects a sort of, I don't know, a hug and a kiss and a hello or something, at least, at the very least, and he won't even speak with her. So she is so heartbroken that she contemplates suicide. But then she is reassured by the three boys. They come in, and she's reassured that Tamino still loves her. So she is finally reunited with the prince as he is about to undergo the final phase of his trials. She rushes in and she states that she also wishes to submit herself to the trials. And what we'll listen to now is some of the most glorious music in this opera, starting just before Tamino and Pamina pass through the caves of fire and water. Here are Ruth Zizek and Uwe Heilmann.
Oh!
Well, the opera ends triumphantly, for good, with the crushing of the queen and her cohorts. And it's rather a strange ending, because the trials have happened, and then suddenly the queen rushes on with Monostatos and a few others, and like, oh, we're going to, you know, take over Sarastra's realm. And then they're very quickly sort of dispatched.
There's usually like a big thunderclap.
Yes.
And they just sort of wither into the floor and just disappear. It's like the Wicked Witch of the West kind of thing.
And she's melting.
That's how I always think about it.
And then you have the glorious ending, and enlightenment and love and wisdom has overcome everything. You can go on our website and read a full synopsis. The most important part is the emotional journey these people go on, and the wonderful music and theatrical journey that the audience will experience. For more information about the recording we've been listening to and the COC's production, please visit our website at coc.ca, where you can also purchase tickets and this recording online. We'd love to hear from you. You can check out our podcast updates on Facebook and let us know what you think or ask us questions or give us suggestions for other podcasts. This is Jana Wichelow. Thank you, John Marco, for joining me today.
You're most welcome.
Please join us again in this continuing series of podcasts sponsored by DECA, the opera label.